Say good morning. Let's begin. I want to welcome some of the members of my Neri Yisrael Johns Hopkins class who are here for the shiur this morning as well. So we're going to pick up today. We'll say today's daf is Chof Ches. We are picking up at the Mishnah on Chof Zayin Amud Beis. Yaakov. Okay, so we're picking up again Chof Zayin Amud Beis. Okay, so it says the Mishnah. You know what? If you bring a few chairs, we could put chairs right over here. All right, so the Mishnah writes the following. The Mishnah says, Nodrin lehar... good morning. Nodrin lehargin ulecharabin lemuchsin. So we'll see. Now, the Mishnah discusses a very interesting case. Now, remember, in the previous Mishnah, we spoke about Nidre Onsin, that Nidarim ultimately, again, that were made with complete and sound mind, but then were unable to be fulfilled because of extenuating circumstances. The Gemara now kind of, the Mishnah continues a little bit on that same theme, but in this case, again, people are making Nidarim because of extenuating circumstances. So literally, a person goes ahead and makes a Nidar to avoid murderers, to avoid Haramim. Haramim literally is a plunderer, or muhsin, tax collectors, shihi truma. A person makes nedar that the property is truma. So how does this case materialize? So let's say again, someone's coming to essentially illegally extract money from me. So we'll discuss these exact cases in the Mishnah, but somebody's, let's say in the Gemara, but somebody's ready to kill me for my property. So what do I say? I say to the individual, you know, I'd be happy to give this to you, but this property is truma. This property is sacred. And I'll show you something interesting. So you say to yourself, well, one second, if the guy's a murderer. So I'll say, look at the rush. Second to last line in the rush, shehi shal truma. Look at this, and this is an amazing thing. Afagav dekatli v'gazli, even though a person might be a murderer, a person might be a thief, lo achli isura, people don't eat something that is prohibited. Otherwise, we'll say what the rush is pointing out is, lest, before we laugh at this, understand what the rush is saying is an incredible insight into human psychology. We all live with inconsistencies. And even people who are exceptionally imperfect, everybody has their thing that they're makbid on. Everyone has their thing. So again, somebody might be a murderer, somebody might be a plunderer, but lemaisa eat shruma? Oh, no, that's not me. At least unless it has three ashkafas. Right? Then I'll eat it. But I want to say, the idea over here is, therefore, I want to avoid going ahead and having my property taken from someone else, by someone else. So I make a neder, I vow to the person that the property is really truma. Therefore, again, the individual is not going to take it. Or shehin shal beis hamelech. Or I say, this is not even my property. This property belongs to the king. The Rebbe says, somebody might be willing to take my stuff, but they're certainly not going to be willing to take the king's stuff. Of course, in both of these cases, essentially, I'm lying. Right? I'm claiming it belongs to the king when it doesn't belong to the king, or I'm claiming that it's truma and it's not truma. So Beishamai or Beishamai says, Bakol nodrin, chutz midishvua, tap of chav ches. So Beishamai says, literally, you can make any kind of neder you want in order to go ahead and save your property, chutz mishvua, with the exception of making a shvua. Now, if you look at Rashi for just a moment, so Rashi says over here, shelo yomar ye'esru peiro sheba olam alai b'shvua im einan shel truma. So again, Beis Shammai says, you could say whatever you need to say, even making something up, in order to save your property, but you can't make a shvua that something is truma in order to save it, let's say, from the tax collector or the plunderer, if it's really not. Now, why is that? So look at the Ran, chutz mishvua, dechamira, dechsiv bei lo yinake. Because remember, again, a shvua is more chamer than a neder. So I could go ahead and I can make a neder to avoid having my property taken by someone, but I can't take a shvua because a shvua is considered to be more stringent than the neder. Ubeisila on beisila say, af bishvua, even a shvua ultimately you can take. So Beisil goes a step further and says, since all of this stuff is really made up to begin with, and it's not your intention to really make any kind of binding vow or promise, you could even take a shvua that the item is truma. And even though shvua is normally considered to be very, very matter, in this case, because your intent is just to avoid unlawful seizure of your property, therefore you're permitted to do this. Beis Shammai says, lo yiftach lo b'neder. So we'll say, to continue this machlokes, Beis Shammai says, lo yiftach lo b'neder. Rashi says, im eino omer nadrali. So Beis Shammai says, let's remember, what's the case over here? The case is, somebody's coming to take my property. I want to save my property. So essentially, how do I save it? By claiming that it's truma. But it's not just enough to claim that it's truma. You could say whatever you want. How do I bolster, how do I solidify my claim that my property is truma? By taking a neder, right? I vow, or according to Beis Hillel, I could even swear, I could even take an oath. What Beis Shammai comes along and says, look, if you have to take the vow, fine. Meaning, if let's say the plunderer or the tax collector or the murderer, if they say, vow to me, swear to me, fine. But Beis Shammai says, don't offer it. Right? Meaning, don't you shouldn't be the one, I shouldn't be the one who goes in and proactively offers to make the false vow. If the person wants me to solidify both of my claims with a vow, I'm permitted to comply, but I shouldn't initiate. Or Beis Shammai says, no. Af yiftach lo. Beis Shammai says, no, you could even be the one who ultimately initiates the vow. Or again, if according to Beis Shammai, you're even permitted to initiate, or we'll see. But according to Beis Shammai, it could be that you're even permitted to initiate the Shvua as well. Beis Shammai omrim b'mashehu madiro. So Beis Shammai says, if you do have to take the vow, l'maisa, again, you could only vow regarding that which the individual wants to extract your property is asking you to vow. We'll illustrate this in just a moment. Beis Hillel omrim af b'mashe'inu madiro. And Beis Hillel says, you could even take a vow regarding matters that the individual is not asking you to vow about. Kate, son, what's an example of this? What's an example of this? So he says, Kate said, so what happens? Let's say, so somebody wants to take my property, and I say, want to take my bushel of apples, and I say, oh, I would give you that bushel of apples, but it's truma. So what does the plunderer say to me? What does the muhsin say to me? He says to me, that's fine. Why don't you take an oath? And I want you to take the following oath. I want you to take an oath that your wife is going to be prohibited from getting any hana from you if in this property is not truma. So va'amar, and what do I say? Va'amar, konim ishti ubanai nanili. And I say, my wife and my children should become prohibited from getting hana from me if this property is not truma. So we'll say, so what did I just do over here? He just asked me to vow, to make a vow that would have implications or repercussions on my wife. I went a step further and I included my kids. Now we'll say, now why did I include my kids? I'm just trying to bolster my claim. That's all I'm trying to do over here. Lamaisa, at the end of the day, I obviously it's not really truma. I'm just trying to save my property. I'm bolstering my claim. So what's the halacha? Beis Shammai omrim ishtu mutar subana vasurim. So listen to this. Beis Shammai says, my wife is mutter. Rabbi say, why is my wife mutter? Because that's what the plunderer was asking me to vow about. So obviously that vow, I have no intentions that it should be binding. It's an extenuating circumstance. But says Beis Shammai, ubana vasurim. But my kids are usher from getting hanoa from me. Why? Why? Because the mice, again, according to Beis Shammai, the plunderer never asked me to swear, or I should say to take an oath regarding, to take a vow regarding my children. I added that in of my own volition. If you do that on your own, then I am responsible for making that vow. Beis Shammai says, no, elu vi elu mutarin. Beis Shammai disagrees, and Beis Shammai says, not true. Both my wife and my children will both be mutar, even though, again, the Maisa, I added in the children of my own volition. I will say, now the logic behind that is the following. Beis Hillel was essentially what Beis Hillel arguing about is Beis Shammai says, look, you only do what you have to do in order to avoid the unlawful seizure. Beis Hillel says, just look at this contextually. Everything that is being said in this context is only done for one purpose, and that is to be able to save my property. Therefore, the fact that I added in my kids to this statement, says Beis Hillel, come out, we're not really looking at any of this seriously, since it's clear that I'm just trying to save my property. Therefore, both my wife as well as my children will not be bound by the neder. Says the Gemara. I'll say, this is amazing. Shmuel, dina damachusadina. So listen to this. So remember that one of the cases in the Mishnah is who's coming to collect my money? Who's coming? The tax collector. So we'll say, so remember, this Gemara is very dangerous. So what does this sound like? This sounds like, I don't want to pay my taxes. So what do? I tell the tax collector, I tell the IRS, oh, I'd love to give you, but you know what? Mamish, it doesn't belong to me. It all belongs to God. Right? I was mocked this shit all. So first of all, I won't get you very far with the IRS. That's number one. Right? Number two, what the Gemara is asking is a much more fundamental question, which is, you have to pay taxes. Rabbi says, it's a very important yisod. You have to pay taxes. We'll say, you know, this is just a bigger discussion, which in general, the concept of paying cash and things like that, one has to be very careful with those things because, again, there is an obligation to pay taxes. We're residents of this country. We have to be law-abiding citizens. You have to make sure that you abide by the laws of the country. So one has to be very vigilant in those types of situations. So different circumstances have different requirements. Sometimes there's a requirement on the buyer. Sometimes there's a requirement on the seller. A person has to understand the intricacies, the financial intricacies of the situations in which they're engaging. What the Gemara is asking is, why am I permitted to go ahead and get out of paying taxes by being makdish my property? Or I should say, by telling the tax collector that I'm being makdish my property. What happens when the tax collector knocks on the door? Well, so what happens in Das Collector knocks on the door? You should pay your taxes, right? Turn your lights out, right? Hide under the table, right? The idea is pay your taxes. So how could the Mishnah be? What the Gemara is bothered by is how could the Mishnah be giving me a strategy for tax evasion when tax evasion ultimately is usher? Dinan d'machus adinan. The law of the land is binding. To which the Gemara says, oh, I'll tell you why. Amram chinna, amrav kana, amr Shmuel. Bemuchas she'en lo kitzva. They both say, when do we say, and this is an important yesod, when do we say dinan d'machus adina? Only when the laws of the land are just. Right? If the law, now again, that, by the way, all right, let's clarify this, right? That's not up to my personal interpretation, right? There, that has to pass an objective threshold. So, for example, what's an example of an unjustified law would be a tax without limits, right? Uncapped taxation. Everyone would agree that that's oppressive in nature. So Dina Tamachusa Dina says you only have to follow the laws of the land. It's clarified in the Shulchan Aruch. When the laws are just, meaning as established by some normative standard, but if the laws are clearly unjust, you don't have to abide by them. So therefore, what kind of tax are we talking about over here? A tax without limit. B'mucha she'en lo kitzva. If you look at Iran, b'mucha she'en lo kitzva. V'cheven she'kein lav dinohu. Elacham sunusa. Oh, so we'll say once you have oppressive taxation, that's not called land. That's not called law. Even if it comes from the king or from the ruler, that's called plundering. And when it comes to plundering, lamaisa, again, you are permitted to evade that plundering by saying that your property ultimately is truma. So in the yeshiva Rabbi Yana, they said, b'muchas ha'omid me'ilav. Oh, what kind of tax collector are we talking about? Not one who's appointed by the government, but a self-appointed tax collector. So, Basi, remember, understand that, you know, Jews throughout the centuries lived under these circumstances, right? They were at the whim of the local landowner. They were at the whim of the local leader, local ruler. Again, without anyone to appeal their cases to, without anyone to take up their cause. So you had situations of people who just became self-appointed tax collectors. So the Gemara is just saying, again, if it's a normative tax, you don't have the right to employ this strategy. But if it's an oppressive tax, then it's no longer called dina d'machus adina. That's called chamsunusa. That's called oppressive plundering. And oppressive plundering, you're permitted to sidestep by ultimately going ahead and telling the plunderer that your property doesn't really belong to you. I will say that obviously this is only going to work in a case, unfortunately, where it seems to be Jew against Jew. Because if it's a non-Jew, if it's a Gentile, so the person is not really going to care because you claim that your property is truma. But lemais, again, or maybe it's not, or maybe it could be a case where somebody respects religion. I don't know. In any event, if this strategy works to tell the plunderer that lemais of the property, or I should say the produce, is truma, then enochinami, that is something you could say. Essentially, what the Mishnah is giving you is the ability to make a false vow, a blatantly false vow, in order to go ahead and save your property. So the Gemara goes on. Heichi nader. So we'll say, so what's the case? What's the circumstance of this ned? I'm sorry. Shehin shal beis hamelech, afapi shehin shal beis hamelech. So remember, again, you're making the neder over here that the property belongs. Remember, first example was you could say the property is truma. Second possibility is that you're saying that it belonged to the beis hamelech, even though, again, they're not really belong to the Beis HaMelech. So, heichi nadar. So, how did you go ahead and make this neder? Meaning, what's the text of the neder? Amrav, 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 ba'omer, yasru peros ha'olam alai, im einan shal Beis HaMelech. So, if a person says, the peros of the world should be usher to me, if these are not the property of the king, the Gemara says, 1 second, kevan da amar yasru isru aleikal per va'omo. So, if that's the case, lemais, again, that seems to be a binding neder, and that could literally go ahead and asr the peros, to which the Gemara says, no, but omer hayom. Oh, what's the case of us? The case over here is where I'm saying, the peros of the world should be usr to me today, if what? If these are not the property of the king, which Abbas say essentially creates a binding neder. So therefore, because they're not property of the king, technically speaking, the peros ha'olam become usr to the vower on that day. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Ida omer hayom, lo makabo mine muchas. Abbas say, remember, this case only works if what? This case only works if the plunderer believes my story. So let's play this out. The plunderer comes to take my property. I tell him it's not mine. It belongs to the king or whatever. It's truma. It doesn't really matter. All right, it's truma. And when he says, okay, vow to me, that's the case. And I say, okay, all the peros of the world should be ushered to me today, right? If this property doesn't belong to the king. So if you're the plunderer, what are you thinking right now? Right? He's lying. obviously he's lying, right? Because if he was telling the truth, then what? Then he'd be willing to make a neder the olam va'ed forever. The fact that he's only limiting his neder to one day, so what's the worst case scenario? Even if he's lying to me, the peros will be asked for one day. So that type of neder is not going to convince the plunderer that I'm telling the truth. To which the Gemara says, oh, ba'omer belibo hayom. Oh, listen to this. What's the case? The neder I'm making is, if this, right, I'm crossing my fingers, right? So, Sanjay, so what am I doing? I'm going in, I'm telling the plunderer, this property is truma, or this property belongs to the king. And if it's not, I vow that if this doesn't belong to the king, that peros of the world should be ushered to me, and I tell him what? I tell him forever. But in my heart, well, I don't even have to say forever, because the truth is, if you don't qualify it, it means forever. But in my heart, I'm saying what? I'm saying I'm only accepting upon this to me for today. So we'll say, so the Gemara says, Omotzi b'sfas of stam, but I don't say today, I just make a stam neder. Now, when you make that stam neder, it sounds like, what's the duration of your vow? What does it sound? Forever. So that's pretty convincing to the plunderer. The afa agav, now what's the chiddush here? The afa agav, the siril and dvarim shebalev, enam dvarim, even though normally we say that if you make a neder, right, and you say one thing, but you're thinking a different thing, what's the impact of your thought process on the neder? Nothing. Normally we say in all areas of halacha, dvarim shebalev enam dvarim, that it matters what you say and what you do. It matters very little about what you think. What you think, right? But the idea over here is this case is a novelty. Since in this case, again, I'm making the neder under duress, and since in this case, again, I have the threat of losing my property, so Chazal recognized your ability to shape your neder by what you're thinking and not just by what you're saying. So that's the incredible chiddush over here. So even though I'm saying to him, ultimately, that peros alone should be ushered to me, stam, forever, but since in my heart I'm qualifying that neder, and these are extenuating circumstances, that little, we'll call that cardiac clarification, that internal, right, that thoughtful, that intellectual clarification, ultimately, again, has the ability to shape the neder. So we'll say, now the Mishnah quotes that whole section of the Gemara quotes that whole section of the Mishnah. So Beishamai Omimbakol, so first of all, Beishamai says, the first thing Beishamai says, that you can make a neder regarding anything you want to save your property, but you can't what? You can't make a shivua. That was number one. Furthermore, Beisharim b'mashe diro, u'beisila om af be'enosh ebaf b'she'eno madiro. Okay, it's odd. Amar lo konim ishti nanis, I'm just quoting the Mishnah, v'amar konim ishti u'banai nanili, beishamai omrim ishto muteres u'banav asurin, u'beisila omrim elu ve'elu muteres. So we'll say, machlokis beisham beisila regards two areas, actually really three areas in the Mishnah. Area number one was, Beishamai says, you can make any kind of vow you want to save your property, but what can't you do, according to Beishamai? What can't you do? Shavua, right? Good morning. Yes. Good morning, everyone. Right, good. All right. No shavua. So that's number one, right? You can make a neder, but you can't make a shavua. Number two, what did Beishamai say? Beishamai says you can't proactively offer to make the neder, but Beis Hillel says you can. And number three, if I make a neder to save my property and I add in something more than the plunderer asked me to vow about, so Beishamai says that extra thing you added in is what? Is binding, meaning it's usur. Whereas Beis Hillel says, no, anything you vow in this context, even if you add in additional stuff, it's not binding. It's not binding. So Rav Huna, so listen to this. So now the Gemara is going to quote a Braisa. Tana. Listen to this. Beishamai omrim lo yiftach lo bishvua. So Beishamai said, you may not go ahead and offer the plunderer to take a shvua. Meaning if the plunderer wants to take your stuff, you say it's truma, you can, and the plunderer doesn't initially believe, you can't offer to take a shvua. Ubeisila omrim af yiftach lo b'shvua. Beisila says, no, you could even proactively offer to take a shvua in order to go ahead and solidify your claim. So the Gemara says, af yiftach lo b'shvua, lebeishamai. So now the Gemara interprets this. Lebeishamai b'shvua udelo yiftach lo, ha b'neder yiftach lo. So we'll say, what can you infer from this braisa? That according to Beishamai, what is Beishamai saying? You can't proactively offer to what? To what? To take a shvua. Oh, what can we infer from that? It's a shvua you can't proactively offer to take. But what can you proactively offer to do? You can proactively offer to take a neder. But one second. But what do we learn in our Mishnah? V'hatinan be'shame omrim lo yiftach lo b'neder. Right? But what do we learn in our Mishnah? We'll say that's what? That according to Be'shamai, not only can you not offer to take a shvuah. Remember, according to Be'shamai, a shvuah is a non-starter in our Mishnah. But in our Mishnah, Be'shamai says you can't even proactively offer to what? To take a neder. So that's contradiction number one. V'su miftachu de lo yiftach lo b'shvuah. Ha meidar nader b'shvuah. But yet again, even from the Braisa makes it sound like you can't proactively offer to take a shvuah, but if the plunderer tells you, I want you to take a shvuah, then what can you do? According to the Braisa, that according to Beis Shammai, you could take the shvuah, but yet, and we learned in our Mishnah, v'hatnan, Beis Shammai omrin bakol nodrin chutz mishvuah. But Rabbi says, what does our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah says that according to Beis Shammai, you could take any kind of neder you want, but what? You can't take a shvuah at all. So Rabbi says, you hear the inherent contradictions? So there's two contradictions, essentially. First of all, working backwards, the Braisa makes it sound like that according to Beis Shammai, you can't take a shvuah, you just can't initiate it. Whereas our Mishnah seems to say that according to Beis Shammai, you can never take a shvuah. That's contradiction one. Contradiction two is what? The Braisa seems to indicate that according to Beis Shammai, you can't proactively offer to take a shvuah, but you can't proactively offer to what? To take a neder. But yet according to our Mishnah, sounds like what? You can't even proactively offer to take a neder. To which the Gemara says, it's not a contradiction. Tanamas nisin b'neder lo di'achal kochan v'Beis Shammai. Both said the truth is, both the Mishnah and the Braisa are just coming along to stress what they each feel to be the greatest novelty in ruling. Namely what? So the Gemara says, Beis Shammai, I'm sorry, Tanamas nisin. So the Mishnah focuses on neder, to go ahead and tell us the strength of Beis Shammai's position. I will say, what's the strength of Beis Shammai's position? If you look at the first wide line in the Ran, so Beis Shammai says that really you should not even offer to take a neder. That's Beis Shammai's shita, and that's what the Mishnah is trying to impress. Beis Shammai is so reticent to have us take false nedarim, even under extenuating circumstances, that if the plunderer or the murderer or the tax collector tells me that I have to vow, fine. Beis Shammai says I can vow. But Lamaisa, Beis Shammai Shita is don't offer it. Don't offer it. Furthermore, again, Tana Braisa, Lo di Achash Kochan de Beis Hillel. And the Braisa's focus is really to teach us the strength of Beis Hillel's position. And what's the strength of Beis Hillel's position? Again, the Ran says, Tana Braisa Bishwala di Achash Kochan de Beis Hillel, Dafila Bishvua Yiftach. So we'll say, what's the strength of Beis Hillel's position? That Beis Hillel says that you're even permitted to proactively offer up an oath. Interesting enough, right? So therefore, again, the Braisa and the Mishnah are both coming to express really the most novel aspects of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel's ruling. So the Mishnah is focused more on advancing the novel stringency of Beis Shammai, which is what? That you should not even proactively offer to take a neder. Shouldn't. If you have to, if he forces you, you can, but don't proactively offer it. Whereas the Braisa is coming to teach you Beis Hillel Shita, what's the novelty of Beis Hillel Shita? That according to Beis Hillel, you can even proactively offer to what? To what? To take a shvuah. Says the Gemara, Rav Ashi says, no, hachi katoni. So we'll say, Rav Ashi sees this a little bit. Rav Ashi says that really, what's at the root of the fundamental dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is the following. Beis Shammai omrim, ein she'ila b'shvua, u Beis Hillel omrim, yesh she'ila b'shvua. So we'll say, we actually touched on this a little bit earlier, but we're going to come back to it later on. But the Gemara says that the fundamental dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is whether or not there is she'ila. Is there revocation or some type of annulment process for shvuah? We'll say, take a look at the Ran for just a moment. So Rav Ashi Amar Hachi Karan Beis Shammai Omrim Ein She'ila B'Shvuah V'lo Matuk Mahach Braisa B'Nishba Lahargin Klal. So remember, so according to this approach of Rav Ashi, the Braisa is not talking about a situation of where you have to swear because somebody is ready to kill you for your property. Ela Hachi Kamar Misha Nishbar Al Davar Lo Yiftach Lo Chacham Lahapti Lo Shvuasa She'ein She'ila B'Shvuah. So what's Rav Ashi understands that in fact the Braisa is referring to something dramatically different. The Braisa isn't seen, I was saying, when the Gemara quoted the Braisa, when Rafuri quoted the Braisa, the assumption was that what? That the Braisa was talking about the same circumstance, same case as the Mishnah. But just like the Mishnah is talking about somebody's trying to extract property from me forcibly, and I'm going ahead and I'm taking a neder or a shvua to get myself out of giving them properties. The assumption was that the Brice is talking about the same thing. Rav Ashi comes along and says, no, the Brice is talking about something fundamentally different. The Brice is recording a fundamental machlokes in Mishnah Mesila as whether or not the concept of she'ela, revocation slash annulment, applies to shvuas or not. Beis Hillel says it does. Beis Shammai says it does not. Fundamental machlokes. The beauty of this interpretation is what? There's no need to reconcile the Braisa with the Mishnah, because indeed they're talking about two different things. Says the Mishnah, Hare netios ha'ilu karban im einon nitsatso. So what's another interesting case? I say, these netios, we'll say netios are young trees, saplings. These saplings should be karban. Which you both say, of course, we know, doesn't literally mean carbon. What it means is their value should be consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash. So these saplings are carbon, are consecrated im einon niktsasos, if they are not cut down. So which sounds, so again, if they remain standing, then lemais again, I'm makdish them. If they're cut down, then they're not hegdish. Similarly, talis zu carbon. This talis should be hektish, should be kodesh. Again, the value of the talis should be kodesh. Im eino nisrefes, if it's not consumed by fire. Okay, so what's the halacha? Yesh lahen pidyon. So these items are subject to redemption. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at the Ran for just a moment. Hare in the tios elu karban, yesh lahen pidyon. Kolomar, dikdusha chala aleim, ad shetzvichos pidyon. So we'll say, what that means, that they require redemption, that's another way of saying that what? That the condition works, and they become kodesh. And therefore, if you want your saplings back, or if you want your talis back, what do you have to do? You have to redeem them. You have to redeem them. So the Ran just points out, the Gemara will discuss why the Mishnah uses this particular phraseology. So that's case number one. So case number one, I say, these saplings should be kodesh as long as they're not cut down. Or this talis should be kodesh as long as it's not consumed by fire. So the Mishnah says, such a tenai like that, such a condition like that works. And as long as the saplings are standing there kodesh, as long as the talis has not been consumed by fire, it's kodesh. Next case, harinatilo sa'ilu karban, ad shiyik tzitzu. These netios ultimately, again, should be kodesh until they are cut down. Talis zu karbon ad shetisarif, or this talis, this talis should be a karbon, should be sacrificial, should be consecrated until it's burned. What's talocha? In lehem pidyon. In this case, lemaisa, again, there is no redemption. There is no redemption. We'll say, let's take a look at the rush. It's the first rush on Amud Beis. In lehem pidyon, let's say spidemei pidyon lechulin. You can't redeem these items. Remember again, in this case over here, what is the guy saying? These netios are karbon, meaning at the point that you go ahead and you cut them down, they'll then become chulin. Time that the talus is burned, it then becomes chulin. So the Rush says, these cannot be redeemed. Ella hamaos nitfasin bekedusha vanatios chozros lios kedushos. So we'll say, so we'll see this. No, I'll read this to you now, even though the Gemara is going to explain it. But the Rush says that essentially these items cannot become unconsecrated. Why? Ella hamaos nitfasin bekedusha. Rather, if you try to redeem them with money, the money itself becomes kodesh. Vanatios chozros lios kedushos. And the saplings become kodesh again as well. Why? Because since he says they're kodesh until they're cut down, that literally it is impossible for them to become deconsecrated until they are cut down. So listen to this. We'll see this again more closely in the Gemara. But what the Gemara says is like this. If you say these saplings should be kodesh until they are cut down, so what's the halacha? Einlan pidyon, which means what Rabbah say, that if you try to redeem those saplings, so it's true, the sanctity of the sapling transfers onto the money, but then something interesting happens, which is what? The sapling becomes kodesh again. Why? Because when a person makes a statement like this, what they really have in mind is that the sapling should not be subject to deconsecration. That no matter what happens, even if you try to transfer the sanctity of the sapling onto money, it's true, the money becomes kodesh, but the sapling still remains kodesh as well. We'll see this in the Gemara. Says the Gemara, V'lisnei kidushos, or I should say kidoshos, v'in kidoshos. So also what the Gemara is bothered by is the following. Why does the Mishnah say, Yeshla and Pidyon, meaning specifically this is really in the first case, right? A person goes ahead and says, these netios, these saplings, should be karbanos as long as they are not cut down. as long as they are in an exasos. So, or this talus should be a carbon as long as it's not burned. So, what does the Mishnah say? Yesh lahen pidyon. They have redemption, which is another way of saying they become kodesh. So, why don't you just say they become kodesh, right? Why do you use that lashon of yesh lahen pidyon? Why don't you just say they're consecrated? To which the Gemara says, "I did debay le Mishnah seifa ein lahen pidyon." Because the Bible says, since we had to say for the second case of the Mishnah that they have no redemption. Because the Bible says, remember again, the second case the Mishnah has to say they have no redemption, because that's another way of saying that you can't shake the Kedusha status of the saplings or of the talus until literally it's cut down. So since we had to use that Lashon by the Seifa, Tana Nami Reisha Yeshlan Pidyon. So too we use that same phraseology by the Reisha as well, which Rabbi says is a common answer the Gemara gives. The Gemara likes, the Mishnah likes to employ textual symmetry. So textual symmetry means we likely use the same Lashon in the beginning and in the end. And even though sometimes that Lashon is not great for one of the cases, but to preserve that symmetry, we'll use that Lashon. See, even though again, Yesh lahem or Ein lahem pidyon was not the preferred lashon by the Reisha, but because you have to use that lashon by the Seifa, therefore use it by the Reisha as well. So hechi nadar, what? How are you making this neder in this case? Meaning, what's the verbiage of your neder? Amra meimar ba'omer im einan niktzasos hayom va'avrayom v'lo niktzitzu. So let's listen to this, where I'm saying the following: these trees should be, these saplings should become kodesh if they are not cut down today. And what's the halacha? Va'avar hayom v'lo niktzitzu. The day passed and they were not cut down. So what's the halacha? They're kodesh. Mm-hmm. To which the Gemara says, well, im kein lama li lameimar pshita. I don't understand. Like, why do I need a Mishnah to teach me that? Isn't that obvious? If I say the saplings are kodesh if they're not cut down today, and they're not cut down today, so they're kodesh. I mean, why do I need the Mishnah to teach me that? Oh, lo tzicha kigon di'ika zeka nefisha. Oh, what's the case of Osai? The case over here is where there is a very strong wind. So I'll say, so now what happens when there's a very strong wind and I say to myself, I'm assuming that what's going to happen? I'm assuming those trees are going to fall down. So what do I say? I say the trees are hekdesh if they don't fall down. So we'll see what a person's mindset is when they make an answer like that. So the wind is blowing. I'm pretty much assuming that they're going to fall down. But I go and I make a neder that if they don't fall down, they're going to be kodesh. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'ka tani la'gabitalis." But one second, before you say that, you have to ask yourself, remember the Mishnah quoted two cases and put them in the same category, the case of the trees that fell down and the talus that was going to burn. So I understand that if there is a strong wind, it's possible and probable that the trees are going to fall down, but where are you going to have the case? Vaktan gabi talus. But the Mishnah also mentioned the case of talus, the talus l'sreifa kaimo, and do we say that a talus is subject to burning? In. Kigon di'ika deleka. Oh, what's the case of Osai? There's a fire in the house. And what does the guy say? If my talus doesn't burn up in the house, I'm hereby makdish it. So listen to this. Hachanami di'ika zeka nefisha v'sanka daitcha demasik adaiti delo misnas. So listen to this case. So what's the case in the Mishnah? The case in the Mishnah is there's a very strong wind that's about to knock down the trees. It looks like the trees are going to knock down. Or there's a fire raging in the house that looks like it's going to consume everything. And what does a guy say? So a guy blurts out, he says, if the trees don't fall down, they're going to be hekdish. Or if the talus doesn't burn, it's going to be what? It's going to be hekdish. So the Gemara says, I might have thought, v'sanko daitra, demasika daite delo misnatzlon, umishum hachi kanadar. So Rabbi say, maybe we could have said the following. Why is this guy making the neder? Why is he being makdish his trees? He's bargaining with God. And the truth is, he figures, you know what? It's not really going to be saved. It doesn't really make a difference. At the end of the day, I could, it's nice to say, I'm ready to give tzedakah, I'm ready to give. But the truth is, the probability of those trees being saved is very small. The house is on fire, right? What's the chances of the talus being saved? So you know what? I'll say, I'm being makdish it for God. If it somehow survives, I'm being makdish, talus makdish the trees. So I'll say, what would we say? Perhaps we would say, in such a case, does a person really have in mind that neder should be chal? No. Why? Because the truth is, in their mind, they don't really foresee the neder coming to fruition because they assume the trees are going to fall down and the talus is going to go ahead and burn and be incinerated. So I might have thought that even if the trees don't fall down or even if the talus is somehow saved, that perhaps the neder should not be binding. Kamashmala, no. No what? No yes. Right? You find that? No. Meaning that no, the neder, yes, the neder is binding. That even though, again, I might have said that this is the type of neder that a person is making because he does not in any way expect that it's actually going to come true. So maybe the neder is not chal. Kamashal, the Mishnah teaches me, it is chal. And therefore, if the trees remain standing, they are kodesh. And if there's, if the talis somehow survives the fire, ultimately it is kodesh. That's the novelty. We'll say it's an incredible chiddush. So again, even though it's clear from the circumstances that I'm only making this neder because I'm pretty sure it's not going to actualize, and for some reason it does actualize, lemaisa, again, the neder itself is binding.
Is that word doesn't literally mean cut down? Call it the same thing?
Well, that's the way the Mishnah is framing the case. No, because if it's cutting down, then what's the chiddush of that? I don't cut down the trees. Right? The chiddush over here is there's an act of God that's at play over here, which looks like it's going to knock down the trees. And even though we could say, my mind says probably neder is never going to come true, but if it does come true, it's binding.
Would that be a Pesach if he wanted to invalidate it? He went to a Chacham. Chacham said, if you had known that it actually would have not burned.
Absolutely. Although, again, we saw that type of Pesach, that type of Charata, is subject to dispute. Right, because charata, that had I known that the details of my neder were going to actualize, I would have never made the neder, is a stretch of charata. So remember, we saw that's a machlokas in the Gemara. Remember, we had that case. I don't remember who it was. One of the time I made a. Remember, he wanted to marry off the stepdaughter to one of his relatives. So we correct. So the answer is yes, but that would be subject to machlokes in terms of what constitutes valid charata. So we'll just go a little bit weiter. Harinatios elu carbon. Let's just do the next lines and then we'll stop. So remember again, this is talking now in the next case of the Mishnah, where a person went ahead and said, Harinatios elu carbon. These netios, these saplings are a carbon until ultimately, again, they are cut down. Or this talis is a carbon, meaning it's consecrated, until it burns. So in lehem pidyon, in that case, the Mishnah said that there is no redemption for these items. What's the pshat? Uli olam. Uli olam, amar, excuse me, uli olam, amar, I'm sorry, what do we say over here? Harin netios elu. Did I skip something over here? Right. Harinatios elu carbon. Good. So the Gemara says, Uli olam. And this is true, by the way, forever. Right? This is true forever. Meaning, I kind of gave this away. I didn't give it away. The Rush gave it away a little bit before. Right? So remember, this process keeps on repeating itself. That remember, again, no matter how many times you try to go ahead and redeem it, so it'll always go back. So if you look at Rashi, so Rashi is actually, this is a kasha. Rashi says, Bitmiya, midiktani eila and pidyon masha, shali olam eila and pidyon, afila achar katsitsa. So we'll say, so it's a question. So Rashi says over here, where the Gemara says, the olam, is this true forever? Right? Forever, meaning the Mishnah says that you can never redeem. You can never redeem the trees, the saplings. You can never redeem the talus. Now, the reason why the Gemara is bothered by this is because, remember, what was the Lashon of the Neder? The Lashon of the Neder was that these netios should be consecrated until they are cut down. The talus should be consecrated until it's burned, which sounds like what? If you were to cut down the saplings, then what would happen? You should be able to redeem it at that point in time. It's no longer Kodesh. So how could the Mishnah say that there's no pidyon forever? So the Gemara is asking, the Olam, is that true that this endures forever? Amar bar pado pidon chozros vikotchos pidon chozros vikotchos. Oh no! What the Mishnah is telling me is like this, Rabosai, that if while the trees are standing, here's the chiddush. If while the trees are standing, you try to go ahead and redeem them, then what happens? The sanctity transfers to the money. But then what happens? In the next moment, the trees become sanctified again. Or really, not even they become sanctified again. Really, the sanctity never left. So you could keep doing... Here's like the kind of like the double whammy on this. The sanctity does transfer to the money. So that's the interesting part, right? Remember, Beis HaMikdash always wins, right? The house always wins, right? The house always wins if you take the gamble. So the idea, not that I know from... David told me that. I don't know that from my own... Right. So what happens? So the idea over here is that what Bar Paz is expressing is when you make this Tanai, that these saplings should be Kodesh until they are cut down. What you are saying essentially is the Kodesh over here is there is no way to remove the sanctity from those trees. That the only way to remove the sanctity from those trees is how? How? To cut them down. But while they are standing, that sanctity remains on those trees, which means that even if you try to redeem those trees by transferring their sanctity onto money, it's true, the money becomes Kodesh also, but the trees are still Kodesh. Ad sheyiktzitzu, ultimately, again, until you go ahead and you cut them down. Now, once you cut them down, niktzitzu, podem pam achas v'dayo. Now, once you cut them down, Rabbi will say, then what? Then, here's the other part. Sanctity doesn't go away by itself. So once you cut them down, what do you now have the license to do? Now you have license to be poed to them. And once you're poed to them, that pidyon, that redemption remains forever. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Niktzitzu, podem pam achas v'dayo, v'yatzu l'chulin. So Rabbi said this. So again, you hear this, it's fascinating. So what it's saying over here is, when you make a neder like this, you see, here's the difference. The difference over here in this neder, see, under normal circumstances, if you make a neder to be makdish something, to consecrate something, so can you go ahead and be poda? Can you redeem that item?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? It's like any other thing that you're, any time that you're makdish something, any time you consecrate something, you're essentially making a vow to consecrate something. And kodesh has pigyon. You could redeem hekdish again with all of the chomesh have done an additional fifth, leaving aside all the details. It's possible. So why is it not possible in this case? What the Gemara is picking up on over here, or Barpa is picking up on over here, is you're not just saying I'm being makdish the saplings. What you're saying is I'm being makdish the saplings until they are cut down. So with the way Barpa is interpreting that statement is what your vow is that there is no way to release these saplings from their kodesh state while they stand. Therefore, even if you actively redeem them, the sanctity will transfer ultimately to the money, but the sanctity will go right back, or it'll never leave the trees. However, once you fell the trees, once you cut them down, then you have the ability to what? To redeem them one time and remove them and put them totally into chulin. V'ula amar, we'll say with just last line, V'ula amar Ula says, Kevan sheniktzitzu shuv ein podin. We'll say Ula just takes this one step further. You see, according to Barpada, once you cut them down, so we'll say Barpada says they still retain their kedusha, even because remember they were standing, they had that kedusha. Kedusha Barpada says doesn't go away without what? Doesn't go without pidyon. So therefore, Barpada says you have to undergo the process of pidyon, transferring the sanctity of the now fell trees onto the money. Ula says no. What happens once you cut down those trees? Kedusha is gone. The Kedusha is gone, and therefore, again, according to Ula, there is not even a need for any type of formal pidyon process. The Bosei will continue Meretz Hashem with this machlokis tomorrow. Shkoyach.
Yeah.
So we'll see why.
They're literally contradicting.
Correct. So we'll see. We're not.